Welcome to Tiny Horse Talk, featuring conversations about ponies and miniature horses. You'll find information and education in each episode, along with a little dash of fun. Join your host, Patricia Milligan of Foxleaf Farm Mini Equine Rescue, an organization dedicated to helping the littlest horses find their way home, as we dive into the world of our smallest equine friends. You'll also hear from Lisa Dearson and Julianne Neal from time to time with tidbits and features from the equine media scene. Tiny Horse Talk is a collaboration between Foxleaf Farm, the Equus Film and Arts Fest, and JA Media Productions. And now, let's talk tiny horses.
Hello, I'm Patricia Milligan, host of Tiny Horse Talk, and I'm welcoming my guests tonight, Hannah Catalino and Lisanne Fear. They are on the Mustang Discovery Ride. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about their experiences with small equines. I'm also the founder and executive director of Foxleaf Mini Horse Rescue. So we're all about minis at Mini Horse Rescue. So Hannah's been a wild horse trainer for a number of years, participated in the Extreme Mustang Makeover, and also done Liberty Clinics within the U.S. as well as overseas. Very exciting. We hosted her here at Foxleaf Mini Horse Rescue to do a three-day Liberty Clinic. And I can say that I was absolutely blown away by the quality of the training and the fact that these horses in 3 days went from being not unhandleable, but not really obedient, to being really well-behaved and actually working without bridles and without ropes, without halters at Liberty. To us, that was like some kind of magic. So maybe, Hannah, you want to talk a little bit about that, how that magic works, because it seemed to me like you were a sorcerer and all of a sudden my horses turned into these lovely, complacent creatures. That was really quite exciting for us.
Yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, thank you so much for not only having us on, but also for, you know, doing a wonderful job hosting the clinic. That definitely helps. You guys brought in a good quality amount of people and horses, and that was really awesome. So, so Liberty is essentially working with our horses without any form of physical attachment to establish effective communication between the horse and handler. So when doing that, really the system that you guys went through was all about trying to break down the body parts and get the horse to understand how to move essentially 1 foot at a time. And then we put all those pieces together, and before we knew it, all the horses were at Liberty in the arena doing an obstacle course, and they all did super awesome. And I'm really proud of everybody.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed. It was just, it truly seemed to me as a participant with a big horse and a little horse, my mini, that it was really magical. So how does that connection really happen? Because my big horse in particular, which is a very people-oriented horse, but still he went one extra step further from being a people-oriented horse to really being connected. And I'm not quite sure I understand what it is they're looking for and how we respond to that.
Yeah, so the connection is all about us being clear communicators and setting up really clear and easy to understand boundaries. And through those boundaries, the horses are able to more easily obey or do what we're asking because they're really understanding. And kind of really the type of liberty that I teach uses two sticks to help the horse understand what's an open door, what's a closed door, help to catch energy and drive energy. And in doing that, it really just makes it really easy for the horse to understand because it's broken down. And when the horses generally don't want to be naughty, they generally don't want to be, misbehaving. They can be sassy sometimes, but for the most part, they really want to, please. And usually, we have to look to ourselves. What are we doing? What signals am I giving my horse? So when the signals are clear, then our horses can do what it is that we're asking. And that's kind of what I've spent a lot of time, a number of years, fine-tuning is an easy to understand program that hundreds of horses have now gone through. And it's really rewarding to see that happen with people and horses who are brand new to Liberty in 3 days.
So you talked a lot in the clinic about questions and answers with your horses. Can you elaborate a little bit for folks who might not understand that?
I'm trying to remember when I was talking about that.
You talked about
in what context?
Well, you talked about the horse looking for giving you the right answer. Because, well, for example, when I was working with Blaze, mm-hmm. I was giving him. Apparently, he was trying a variety of answers for me. So I'm not quite sure. I understood that completely. With he was backing up when we wanted him to go sideways.
Oh, okay.
And you were saying, oh, he's not. That's not the right answer, but he's trying. Mm-hmm. So can you elaborate a little bit about that idea?
Yeah. So a lot of times our horses will be quick to give us an answer, but it's not always the right answer. So we have to be understanding and, okay, he's backing up. That probably means he's a little unsure. Oh, here he's, you know, stepping away, but we just worked on maybe shoulder yield. So he's not necessarily stepping away to leave. It's just, that's what we just worked on. You know, us being understanding of, you know, that's an answer and that's him trying helps us not be as frustrated with our horse as he's getting the wrong answer. You know, we just have to kind of stick through it with them so that they understand that, that, you know, that's great that they're giving an answer, but it's not the right answer. So please keep trying, please keep trying, please keep trying. And then as soon as they get the right answer, that, you know, we have got to be clear that, oh, yes, that was it. Release the pressure, really great job. And that's going to help that horse gain confidence in, you know, maybe the pressure doesn't necessarily increase too much as they're giving an answer. But us, you know, being consistent and continuing to ask, that's really important to help them understand. And that really helps us not get frustrated if we can look at it from that way of, oh, he's not doing it. Well, he's giving me an answer, but it's not the right answer.
Right. And that made a lot of sense to me as my horse kept backing up and that wasn't the right answer. And instead of getting frustrated, I was trying to look at it from that perspective. So thank you. That was really helpful because I was thinking about questions and answers with horses and trying to understand. So on this trip, you're traveling with a burro.
I am. Yeah, I mean, this trip is already difficult enough, you know, riding one horse, packing another. I just had to add in a burro into the mix.
Just to make it more exciting.
Yeah, just keep things exciting.
So before we talk about that, tell me the difference between a burro and a donkey. Or are they the same creature? Because
yeah.
You hear a lot of folks say, oh, I have a burro. And other folks say, I have a donkey. And in my mind, they're the same, but maybe.
Yeah, it's almost like tomato, tomato. I mean, okay. A little bit different, slightly different word. But yeah, it's essentially the same thing. Burro means wild donkey. I guess for the technically BLM burros, it'd be more accurate to maybe say burro. But a burro is just a wild donkey. So.
Oh, okay. So tell us about your wild donkey. He's a small equine also.
Yeah, he is. He's only 12'1", but, you know, that's pretty good size for a donkey. He's a 7-year-old. He was rounded up out of Nevada. His name is Cody. And I got Cody, I began his training somewhere around April, and I picked him up out of holding because I wanted to do, I've always done a lot of those Mustang Makeover 100-day challenges, but I really wanted to do a burro 100-day challenge. I've never got a chance to do that. For whatever reason, I decided to compete this year in 3 different challenges, and Cody was one of my challenge animals. You know, we had a lot going on, but yeah, Cody did amazing. So I got him for my 100-day burro challenge. It was called the Mustang Mania Tip Challenge in Nampa, Idaho. And yeah, he did amazing. We had to do a handling conditioning class, which essentially shows that we can pick up our burro's feet and they can trot in hand, halter and catch, load in a trailer, all that good stuff. And he did really well in that class. Then there was a trail class. He was pretty convinced that there was a donkey eating troll that lived under the bridge. So he didn't place as well in that class. But, you know, we had to trot through serpentines and go over poles and things like that. The artificial lighting was really playing with him. That was one thing we didn't train a lot for, but the glare of the light kind of messed with him in the arena. So he wasn't as brave as normal, but he did awesome for his freestyle. The freestyles are one of my favorite parts of the competitions because we really get to have the freedom to do whatever it is we want. And I got to do Liberty with him, which one of the judges was actually a mule and donkey trainer. And he's really impressed that I could get one to do Liberty. And I was like, oh, that makes me feel so much better because he was really getting kind of upset with some of the burro trainers, and I was like, oh man, but I was really happy that he did so well. So in preparation for it, he also learned to drive. So he's really awesome little driving dude. He acts like he was meant for it. And then right before this trip, I actually started him under saddle because he is a slightly larger donkey. He's been really awesome, super quiet. I think his second ride was out on the trail because they get kind of bored in a round pen. I mean, a lot of horses do too.
Sure.
But especially the burros. I mean, you need that forward. You need them to go somewhere. His first couple of rides were on the trail, and he's been doing really great.
So when you train a burro or a donkey, is it just like training a horse, or do you approach them differently? Because they are different in the way they look at the world.
Yeah. So I go through the same program with the wild mules, the wild burros, and the wild horses. But how the burros or mules react tends to be a little bit different. So then it's in their reactions how I make adjustments in my program. So they go through essentially the same things, but I kind of cater and do my releases, and my expectations are maybe a little bit different because they, like you said, they do interact with the world slightly differently.
Right. Yeah. We were all impressed with your burro, because he was absolutely wonderful and sweet. And I think a lot of people left the clinic thinking that they needed to bring home a BLM burro.
Yes.
So for anyone who's been thinking about it, I have two mini donkeys myself, and I can assure you that I did not know what I was missing until this donkey showed up. So they're, and I'm going to try to bring them along with some of the Liberty techniques, and hopefully I'll be able to apply that to them.
Yeah, I find that they do really well. So where people get stuck with the donkeys is people try to pull them and force them to do things, and they don't react to physical pressure the same way horses do. So I actually find that the burros take really well to livery training because it's a driving pressure and not a direct pressure. So they tend to respond really well. Once they start to get the concept, and he's pretty happy with it. I mean, I try to keep my donkeys pretty sensitive, just because I need that forward. I need that sensitivity. He seems to do really, really well with that driving pressure, which then led into ground driving really well. And then led to him learning to, pull a cart and then essentially ride. You know, I just carry a little dressage whip if need be. And he understands that pressure, and you know, even lazier horses or shut down horses, the more leg you put on them, generally makes them shut down. So, you know, gentle tap of the stick usually is enough to drive them forward, and so it all kind of connects together really nicely.
Oh, that's really exciting. Like I said, I have donkeys, and it's taken me a while to understand how donkeys work and donkeys think. So this is a new way of thinking of working with my donkeys, and I'm pretty excited about that. I do want to ask you a question that's kind of a little bit off the wall. You've been doing this for a number of years. What's been your best experience, and what's been your, oh my God, I can't believe that happened to me experience?
Oh my goodness.
Have you had
I feel
one?
Like there's been a lot all over the place.
Have you had those kind of, oh my God, I can't believe this horse just did this to me?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one isolated one to talk about. Do you want a Liberty type or any like Mustang?
From your experience, because I know that as a trainer, you're so accomplished, you've done so much. And all of us amateurs always have those, oh my God, moments where I just can't believe,
like my
mini in the clinic on Sunday was demonstrating his interpretation of what Liberty really meant.
Yeah.
Which was running around like a lunatic and not paying attention. He was at Liberty zooming around like crazy, and that was what he thought was Liberty. I was mortified and embarrassed. Have you had anything like that happen to you when you've been in all of your training, like in competitions or in front of people when you're showing off?
Oh my goodness. Okay. Thank you. So my first, I've had some freestyles and things go really, really well, but, I've also had my fair share that have not gone very well. So actually my first, Mustang makeover, I not only had, one Mustang, but I had two Mustang yearlings, and my first one to go that morning went amazing. Like he nailed every single thing to his freestyle. We only had 3.5 minutes and he went out there and he did phenomenal. I was super proud of him. He went from 16th place out of 60, over 60 youth to 4th place, which was really, I mean, he almost had a perfect score to jump that high.
Wow.
And then my other one went into the freestyle in 5th place, but went bumped down to 12th because halfway through our freestyle, he started bucking and kicking and I couldn't stop him. And so he's just jumping and running around circles. And I was only on 2 hours of sleep. And I couldn't even stop him or control him in a halter at that point. And he kicked me. He had never kicked me the whole time I was gentling him. And here he kicks me in front of everybody in my freestyle. And I'm like, yeah, this is great. I don't even remember how I got him to stop, but somehow the music stopped and he was still running around. But a really rewarding moment was actually I took that same horse that I couldn't control in a halter and on a lead rope. And 2 years later, he was a yearling that first competition, as a 3-year-old, I actually competed in what was called the American Horsewoman's Challenge. And that was the first, as far as we know, the first in-person Liberty show. And there was a cowboy, extreme cowboy race, class. There was a cowboy dressage class, and then there was a Liberty class, and Ace actually placed out of, you know, I was only 19 at the time, out of all of those women, it was only women, which was really unique about the competition. We placed 2nd in that class, and then we were overall reserve champion. And that was really rewarding because everyone was like, oh, why didn't you use your other colt? That did so good. But it meant a lot to me to have Ace redeem himself. And here we were doing Liberty in an arena, you know, and he was doing bridleless as well. And 2 years ago, I couldn't control him, you know, with any of that stuff on.
Wow.
So it was really rewarding that he had that chance to redeem himself. So that would definitely be an example of 2 highs and 2 lows with the same horse.
The same horse. Yeah, I've discovered that horses have this amazing ability to make you feel either incredibly accomplished or incredibly inept.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't seem to be anywhere in the middle. It's like, oh, I'm so wonderful. And, oh, my God, I just can't believe
it. All right, you got to be aware, like, as you start to feel like you get it, you know something's coming to make you question that again.
That's been kind of my experience a lot of times with horses. And I always learn from it and try to grow from it. And that was one thing that myself and many clinic participants mentioned, how much they learned and how they've just even changed inside themselves thinking about their horse, mm-hmm. which is huge.
Yeah.
Right? No, you change you and then you change your horse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's people forget that often. And I know, particularly with minis, minis are so cute that oftentimes, and I'm guilty of this myself, that we kind of forgive them their naughtiness because it's just so funny and it's just so cute. And then they start to learn that that's the response that we're looking for, or the answer to the mm-hmm. question always is to, oh, I can be naughty. I can just run around and be cute. And I found that changing my thinking, thanks to some of your insights about myself, enabled me to be able to work with my really naughty mini a little bit more successfully this weekend. And I thank you. And we're looking forward to our journeys together.
Awesome.
Yeah. So speaking of minis, you mentioned that you started with minis.
Yes, I did.
So tell us about your mini adventure.
Yeah. So I actually, my first horse was a grade quarter horse. But in Texas, it's ironic. Minis are a big thing. Everything is not bigger in Texas. So I had a lot of friends that showed in the mini horse circuit and the Pinto shows. And I got really interested in the minis. And actually, my first show horse was a mini. Her name was Classy, and I really learned a lot with her because you don't really ride your mini. So I spent a lot of time on the ground. I taught her tricks. I got into Liberty with her. And then, you know, I also taught her to drive and things like that. And that I think is unique. A lot of kids, I feel like, really want to just ride their horse around and things like that, or even people. And right from the start, I kind of really found a way to enjoy my horses and spend time with them that didn't involve necessarily riding.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know a lot of folks that have older horses not quite sure what to do with them when they really can't be ridden. And it seems like Liberty would be a great thing for them to do, because you could still work with a horse, say, for example, with Kissing Spine, mm-hmm. that still wants to work, still wants to engage, mm-hmm. but can't really be ridden.
Yeah, no, and Liberty is great for even the young horses. So, I mean, you can start with horses. I mean, I've done Liberty with a burro as young as 4 months old, and especially the older horses, too, or horses for whatever reason are having soundness issues. Liberty is a great way to still do something with them. And it doesn't have to be, oh, they're in the round pen running around. I mean, you saw this weekend, if a horse ran, it usually was, you know, their idea. There's ways to do Liberty and do these sort of things where the horses aren't getting worked up. I mean, there was probably more horses that never ran at all during the clinic than there were horses that were running. And so it is something that can even be a rehab type thing
So do you find that when you work with a horse on the ground, that it translates when, for example, when you're under saddle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that I'm a really big believer in is also doing a lot of work with like flexing at Liberty and really starting to, in some ways, gain control of the head. And that all translates under saddle, because what I'm essentially doing in my program, I gentle my Mustangs at Liberty. So my Mustangs are learning to, they're learning to cross obstacles. They're learning to saddle, load in the trailer, pick up their feet, all of that without ever having been haltered. And how that happens is with the two sticks, I'm essentially showing them how to properly respond to them. But I'm using the stick almost to replace the halter or to prepare them for the halter. So the horses in the clinic, when they show up, the sticks are being put in a place where they're familiar with pressure. But my wild Mustangs are learning how to respond to pressure on their face in a preparational manner. And by the time I do halter them, they act like they've been haltered the whole life. And you wouldn't even know that it was their first time ever being haltered. And the halter, of course, translates to the bridle later on as well.
That's really remarkable when you think about it, because you think so much, the first thing you have to do is get a halter on that horse, right? I've got to get a halter on that horse. And so what I just heard you say and tell us, and you said this to us this weekend, is that you do the whole process and the halter's at the very end, mm-hmm. which is really probably counterintuitive to a lot of folks.
Yeah, and then I also start my horses at Liberty. So my Mustangs also are bareback and bridleless, and all the cues that I use essentially all translate to the cues that I would use to teach them how to ride. So, and then they graduate into the halter and they graduate into a bit. It's to me a way that's a little bit more natural to them. So you would never see a horse go and lead another horse by their tail, right?
Right.
Physical pressure isn't the way that they really naturally operate. They operate with, you know, they pin their ears or swish their tail. So they operate a lot on visual cues, and the sticks offer a visual cue that they can move off of versus physical pressure. So for my Mustangs, I use that, those visual cues to help them transition towards or have a kind of a stepping stone to understand what physical pressure is. So when they ask a question of like, oh, what does this pressure mean? I can say, oh, you know this, by then showing them the cue that they know as they start to advance into physical pressure.
So does this help, for example, if you have a horse that's a little nervous, to help them calm down a bit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Mustangs generally are pretty nervous. A lot of times people, and I was guilty of this too, a lot of times people kind of tiptoe around those nervous and reactive horses, but those are the horses that need to learn how to respond properly to pressure or how to not react at every little noise. And the beauty to Liberty is, and it's kind of opposite, you know, a lot of times we're sending our horses over obstacles or telling them to get away from us, but Liberty actually teaches our horses to come into pressure. It says, you know, here's a stimulus, and I want you to, you know, face your fears instead of run away from them. And that's kind of a, sometimes a backwards thinking for the horse. And so it actually does really help them become brave. And they always have the freedom, you know, of choice to decide. And usually the horses actually become braver because they realize that they can make that choice. A lot of times they get really nervous when it is us holding them saying, you have to do this. It definitely helps the nervous or reactive horse.
Oh, that's really interesting. That would be counterintuitive to how most of us probably think. Right? Take your horse out there, show them that scary thing, right? You read that over and over again.
Yeah.
Desensitize, throw the tarp all over them and terrify them, as opposed to allowing them the ability to be able to make a decision. Mm-hmm. It's respecting their intelligence too.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, there is a guy that I did a clinic with several years ago. He's a trainer in Belgium. He does a lot of like bareback and bridleless riding through villages in his country. And his thought was that horses are spookier in tack because of us kind of holding them back. But he found that his horses, he rehabilitated a warm blood that was like super reactive and super spooky. But when he actually would, you know, with a lot of time, I'm not saying everybody pull your bridles off, he doesn't fix a problem. With a lot of time, he actually found out and discovered that his horse was actually calmer because she realized she could move in any point that she wanted to. And therefore she didn't feel trapped and she was actually more relaxed. So ever since then, I've been kind of thinking about things a little bit differently. Again, don't recommend pulling off your bridles of your spooky and reactive horses, but it kind of shifts the way you think of it, though.
Certainly it does, because then you start thinking about, well, here you are confining your horse, and your horse may feel a bit claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm. So maybe just giving them more rein, you know, is the way that you can give them a little bit.
Softening to them a bit more, yeah. Which versus, is also oftentimes counterintuitive. When your horse is acting up, the last thing you think you want to do is throw the reins away or really release to them or really push them forward, which can help them think, oh, okay, I can get out of this. So that's, I had never thought about going bridleless, but that's something that I will certainly keep in the back of my head. And I'll call you when I'm ready.
Okay.
Here's Blaze. Fair Let's enough. Try him bridleless. It's a long way to the ground from that horse. So that's really, really cool stuff that you've been doing. I can't tell you how much we were blown away by seeing this in our own horses. And it was just, and seeing it in us too, right? As I talked to other folks that were at the clinic this weekend and participants, and there's several of us that are going to get together and at least once a week or maybe twice a week.
Oh,
and
yeah,
work.
That's awesome.
And that'll be really fun.
Yeah, it's so exciting.
And when we advance, we'll call you back.
Okay.
Come back and look at us and go, oh, I don't know about that. And see what we're doing. So let's turn the conversation a bit to your journey, what you're doing. And here we're going to talk to Lisanne and going to tell us how you guys came up with this idea. And what you think, you know, where you, what your plans are, what your goals are, and how you think this journey is going to go for the next 12 months or so. I think that's about right, 12 months?
13.
Oh, my God, 13. Lucky 13.
Yeah.
Lucky for you. Okay.
Yeah, Baker's dozen there.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. So this journey kind of got started. It was a lot smaller when we first kind of talked about the idea. I was lucky enough to actually learn from Hannah, too. I've always been fascinated by liberty. And a couple years ago, I was lucky enough to intern under her. Mm. And so I interned under her for a couple months. And my background is in, like, ranching and packing up in the mountains and different things. And we kind of briefly talked. And I was like, well, like, now that I've come and learned from you, like, you should come down to Wyoming and learn a thing or two from me. And we should go on like a week to a month long trip with our Mustangs and just like promote the horses. But after the internship ended, we kind of got busy with other things and we didn't really talk, but we had discussed how cool it would be to find a mule stang. So like a wild born mule. And pretty much exactly like 1 year later after the internship had ended, a mutual friend of ours had posted a mule, a wild born Molly mule, for sale. And Hannah reached out. She's like, did you see that so-and-so had the mule? And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. So I'm like sending him like all of these photos being like, I promise I'd be a really great home for this mule to come home to. And Hannah, like, she was like, well, I'd be interested in teaching a mule at Liberty. And she was like, do you want to co-own? And I was like, I don't know what that means, but yes, like, let's do it. And so we ended up getting this mule. Her name is Abilene. And she's pretty much been our spark for the whole trip. We decided really? That once we got her that we needed to do something bigger and bring more awareness to the Mustangs. Huh. Because we started looking into something now that we had a pack mule, which actually to date, I don't know that she's ever had a real load on her. We've done a lot of fake stuff, but She was the inspiration for everything. And so we were looking into trips that actually ran north to south, but we didn't want to repeat Unbranded.
Right.
That ran across the continental divide there from Mexico to Canada. So we looked into the Pacific Crest Trail.
Right.
But then we found out that Hannah has sickle cell trait, so she can't be at high elevations very long. Her blood cells literally change shape.
Right.
And so that one was out of the question. And then we looked into the Appalachian Trail, which is right here in this vicinity, but they don't allow horses for the whole thing. And so
Bad on them.
Yeah. At that point, Hannah was kind of like, well, like, I'll support you in whatever you want to do. And I was like, oh, we'll find something or figure something out. And sure enough, within like a day or two, Hannah found the American Discovery Trail. And so that's actually what we're using as our guideline.
Wow.
So
tell us about the American Discovery Trail, because I'm sure that most of us have not heard about that. I know I wasn't aware of it until I met you guys.
Yeah. So the American Discovery Trail pretty much runs out of Lewis, Delaware, or Cape Henlopen Beach there. All the way to San Francisco in California. And so it's the first like cross-country trail. They have a northern route and a southern route. Since we'll be riding through the winter, we'll go through the southern route. So that takes us through Delaware, Maryland here, where we're at now. We'll actually be in West Virginia tomorrow, which I'm kind of, it's crazy that we've crossed that many states. Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, Colorado, Utah, Nevada, and then California. So yeah, it goes across. There's actually a bill in front of Congress right now that's trying to get passed. And the bill is just basically asking that the American Discovery Trail be recognized on the same level as the Continental Divide or the Pacific Crest Trail or the AT, the Appalachian Trail. So yeah, if you know of anyone or have any senators that you'd like to contact, you should tell them to vote for that trail passing as something like the rest of the trails that we have in America. So it's really exciting. We're excited to like have them with us, and like the association's been super helpful. We've had to adapt for horses. Obviously it might be a little bit easier if you were biking or running it, but we've had a really, really good time on the trail so far. But our journey went from 2,500 miles to 5,000 miles. And with that 5,000 miles, we were like, well, aside from us just wanting to live with our horses for a year, we should go for a bigger cause and really raise awareness for the Mustangs. And so that's where we came up with the 5,000 miles, 5,000 Mustangs. So we're trying to inspire and educate on the adoption of 5,000 Mustangs from holding.
So that's a good point, because I know that I was thinking after our experience here about bringing a Mustang into my life, but I'm not quite in a position to take on a wild horse. So how does that work? I mean, I would love I'm all about rescue. We have a mini rescue here, and I'd love to bring one in, and I love horses, but I don't think that I'm quite ready to take on a wild horse. And I'm sure a lot of folks feel the same way. So how could we help in that regard?
Yeah. So there's kind of a scale from like, let's say like completely broken, some discipline to completely wild. And so kind of the next stage that's available for people is the TIP program through the Mustang Heritage Foundation. And the TIP program stands for Trainer Incentive Program. And the Mustang Heritage Foundation actually pays trainers to gentle horses down. So you can go to a facility or you can buy a horse online through the online auction that's completely wild and find a TIP trainer to train that horse for you through that program. And the government is actually helping get that horse to where you can pick up all 4 feet. They lead on a halter and they load in the trailer. So those are the TIP requirements. And then you can work further with the trainer, and like if you wanted it started under saddle,
right?
You have to negotiate that with the trainer, and that comes out of your own pocket. But
okay,
that's kind of like the next level. Like that's like the bare minimum of like the taming of the horses. And then they have several other programs. So Hannah and I actually met through an extreme Mustang makeover, which Hannah mentioned previously, and that's a 100-day competition. So those horses are under saddle. They're still pretty green broke, a lot of them. But they do have quite a bit of experience. Another program that's really nice is the prison program. So my main horse, Chileno, that I've been riding across America, he was started in a prison program. And so the prisoners actually put 100 to 120 days on him.
Oh, wow.
And so that's another great way. Again, like they're still green broke, but I really enjoy that program because it's two different entities helping each other. And so that's one way. And then just finding trainers privately. There's a few Facebook groups that are able to help you find those more finished horses that are around. So
probably more suited for an awful lot of folks.
Yeah.
So for the other programs, do you find that through the Mustang Heritage Foundation?
Yeah, the Mustang Heritage Foundation is a great resource. And then the BLM is also another great resource, the BLM.gov.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, for the prison programs. And then they have, like, the online internet auction. So,
right.
Yeah, there's several different ways where you can get horses.
How do you become a tip trainer?
So, tip trainer, you have to go through an application process where they kind of vet you and you have to have references and everything. The biggest thing, though, is actually having the right facilities. So getting a completely wild horse, you have to have 6-foot fencing. You have to be able to provide a shelter for them. But the fencing is really usually people's hardest challenge, which Hannah and I both experienced. Like, it is very important to have that super high fencing. Hannah's place is definitely Fort Knox or Round Curl. I think it's like 10-foot fencing all the way around. Like, there's nothing that's ever even tried to crawl over her fencing there. But wow. I mean, with that being said, like, I've had several horses that after 10 days, like, they were pretty docile and, like, weren't looking to exit anything. And so, like, I've had them in electric fencing and different things, and they respect them just like any domestic horse does, too.
Oh, that's really cool. That's really cool, because I am excited about the idea of bringing a Mustang into my life. I've had a lot of other breeds, and I've been so impressed with your horses.
Yeah.
And I think that would be kind of a good thing to do, because there's so many of them that need homes.
Yes, most definitely. And, you know, the Mustang, I think the biggest thing is they really aren't a breed. It's more like rescuing a dog from the pound. You just never know what's mixed in there. Like, one of my horses is really Morgan-like. Hannah has one that's a lot more sporty and Arabian-like. And then, like, we've seen drafty ones. They're all still considered Mustangs, but...
Have you seen any minis?
Mustangs? There's actually a herd called Tilly Creek in Utah. And these Mustangs are like 11 to 12 hands, some of them.
Oh, my. Okay. And, now we're talking.
Yeah. So one of those might be right up your alley. I think they're a smaller herd, so they're not rounded up very often. But there's someone who's doing amazing. She adopted two that look very similar to each other.
Right.
And she's actually got like this little mini Mustang driving team. It's super adorable.
Oh, how cool. Yeah, okay. There we are. Yeah. There we are. We're ready.
Yeah. Remember Tilly Creek.
Tilly Creek. Okay. And I can look for
Tiny Horse Talk.
Tiny Horse Talk. Yeah. I can remember that for, I could find that on BLM when they...
So the BLM.gov, they actually have a list of the HMAs, and HMA stands for Herd Management Area.
Okay.
And for each of those, like, they kind of give like a little description of like the horses that are in that area and like what you can expect color and height wise and kind of like the environment that they're in. My horse Finn, who's actually been the videographer horse a lot, his herd management area on there says like a bunch of ranch horses turned loose, and I just joke that he's my giant black lab and was born to be domesticated. Like, he loves humans so much, and so it makes sense that maybe he's not as wild as like, say, Hannah's horse Bagheera, going back to more Spanish lines.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. So how can people follow you, support you, meet you, help you out? Find out about what you're doing?
Yeah. So probably the easiest way is Facebook or Instagram at Mustang Discovery. If you search that, you'll find us. And then on our website, we actually have a directly donate button on our website, and that's MustangDiscovery.com. And that's great for us because, like, going through anything else, it takes a lot of the cut out of it. So all of that money really does go directly to us. We even have a shirt campaign running, and that's at the bottom of the donate now page. And then there's monthly subscriptions too. Like, $5 a month really helps us out. And that's our burrow subscription. So that's like our tiny guy.
Right.
Yeah. Subscription. And then it goes all the way up to Abilene, who is our unicorn, the mule staying subscription of $50 a month. So any little bit and all helps. It really does.
So thank you. So, folks, you know, how to help these ladies out with their rides. I do have a question, though, coming back to Abilene. So you say a mule staying is like a unicorn.
Yeah.
So tell us more about why a mule, which most of us think is pretty common, would be so unique from a BLM perspective.
Yeah. So mules are completely sterile. So, like, they don't reproduce naturally in the wild. And then the other thing is, like, when they're out in the wild, there's very few herd areas where burro herds and horse herds actually overlap. And then the other thing that makes them more rare than that is a lot of times, like, the BLM, after rounding them up, they'll turn them back out because they are sterile and they aren't going to add to the population problem
right, sure.
out in the wild. So to actually have one that's rounded up and then offered up for adoption is, again, super rare, and so rare that we actually have two of them now.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. They're super cool. We had one born in holding. We don't really know where her mom was from. So, but yeah, Abilene was born in the wild in California. So she really is our unicorn.
Right. I bet she's looking forward to going home.
Yeah. We have a long ways home. For
right.
Sure.
Exactly. Just keep reminding her. So talking about mules real quickly, how different are they from donkeys? How different are they from horses? Are they the best of both? Are they the worst of both?
Yeah, that's a good question. They're their own individual. We've actually been working with an animal communicator, like, to kind of talk with Abilene a little bit more and understand her more. She has quite the diverse and not so great past. And so one of the things that the animal communicator said was, like, she understands that she's different. Like, she's neither donkey nor horse. And, like, sometimes, like, she doesn't know how, which side of her to react with, which I found really interesting. But sometimes, like, we notice, like, she does freeze like a donkey. And then other times, like, she's super extra reactive. I think the number one thing is like a horse, like, mules never forget. But I think different is horses are very forgiving animals, and mules never forget, and they hold grudges.
Oh, okay.
And they're really accurate when they decide to, like, pay up. So
so watch out.
Yeah.
You offend your mule, watch out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. Anything else you'd like to tell us about on this trip so far?
Yeah. I mean, we've really been surprised by all of the support. We're super happy that things are working out. We'd really like to give a shout out to our sponsors, like Mustang Heritage Foundation. They've been helping us out the whole way. And, like, that's where Hannah and I met. So that means a lot to us. BLK came on board and was able to sponsor us, our truck and trailer. So that way, like, people have been a little bit worried about us traveling across the country. It is a really big team effort, and we do have a lot of support, and, like, we are safe every night. So
that's good.
Yeah. But
I'm now one of your warriors.
Yeah.
It'll be okay.
Yeah. So, but I mean, we run into great people like you, and we've been super surprised and pleasantly surprised, like, really, really happy. One of the things that, like, my father said before we left for this trip was, like, he was like, "Now, Lisanne, the East Coast isn't the mountains of Wyoming." Like, he doesn't worry about me out there with the mountain lions and bears and things, but he is worried about the East Coast folk out here. So it's been a really great relief, honestly. And we've had so much support, so
yeah. Well, we're all excited, and we're looking forward to following your journey. And thank you so much for taking this time out of your schedule to talk to us. And we wish you well, and we're looking forward to all the updates.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah,
it's been a fantastic place.
Great, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Tiny Horse Talk.